Church and State, Communion Fellowship, The Church Year, Baptism, Lutheranism. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a simple explanation series. It's a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics. A simple explanation pamphlet is perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A simple explanation series. Everyone's noticing this. Even the New York Times had a story recently about pod schooling or pod learning or pandemic pods. Everyone's looking for a solution to the education problem. Going back to school, virtually going back to school, staying home, homeschooling. Some are doing pod learning. How is it different from homeschooling? And why do some school districts object to it and refuse to support parents' desire to pod school their kids? Joining us to talk about pod schooling and the pandemic, Holly Shear. She's a Lutheran pastor's wife and mother of four children in Cheyenne, Wyoming, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "Why It's Ridiculous to Dunk on Parents for Privately Schooling Kids in Pods." Holly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on today.
As a mother of small children, why are you especially concerned about education right now?
I am concerned because I think it is very important, especially with younger children, to have consistency. I think with everything so up in the air, it's important to let kids know what to expect. I think kids want to know what's coming next. I think all of us at this point actually really want to know that. And at this point, none of us really know what's coming. We don't know week to week. We don't know what to expect with education, especially. And it's scary for kids. It's scary for parents.
What are pandemic pods?
Pandemic pods are one of the most 2020 things I've heard of. It's the idea of tiny little micro schools where parents work together with other like-minded parents to hire a teacher or a tutor to individually school their kids in a tiny micro school in one of their homes. So you find some families with kids of a similar age or where you have a similar philosophy, and you basically hire your own teacher and set up your own tiny school.
Why are families turning to pod learning now?
I think they're doing it to directly combat that instability that we're all facing right now. They're doing it because you know what to expect. You know who's going to be teaching your children. You know where it's going to be happening. You know that it's not going to be facing shutdowns. It's not going to be facing school closures. You know it's not going to be going online unexpectedly. You know what to expect. You know what's going to be taught. You know how it's going to be taught and where. It gives families a little bit of control back in a situation where I think everyone feels a total lack of control right now.
Speaking of that lack of control, just talk a little bit about the completely confusing and messed up nature of educational options being presented or not presented to parents.
So we all know kind of what our choices were before 2020, right? You could send your children to school down the street, but right now we don't know what that looks like. They could be in person in class 1 week, and then if there is an exposure in the school, that could shut down abruptly, and it goes back to how it was in the spring where everyone is learning from home. There is the virtual school option where you are doing all of your work at home online, and that asks parents to kind of have this deep knowledge of how to handle the technology aspect of that. You are kind of tech support for your children, and that can be deeply troubling for a lot of families, especially if you don't have good infrastructure already set up at home for that. Or if both parents work, someone has to be there actually for their children to sit there and supervise all of this. I have a lot of friends who are very concerned about the day-to-day logistics of who's going to actually physically be there for their children. There are the families who were homeschooling before all of this, but they homeschooled with other families as an active part of their education. They had co-ops, they had play dates, they had field trips together, and all of that's kind of on hold right now because the places you did those things are closed or they're not allowing groups of children. Everything that we had going for us as parents, as educators before this, all of it's really up in the air right now.
So compare and contrast pod schooling with homeschooling. How is it different? How is it the same? Better or worse?
You know, I think better or worse is really hard right now because I feel like we're looking at choices that are so complicated and so deeply personal for each family. What works for you right now might not look really great next month, and what works for my family might not work great for your family. But homeschooling and microschooling, both of them, they have your children at home, right? They have them educated where the parents have a ton of say over what's being taught and how and who they're being taught with. You get to pick the other families your children are being educated with. One of the big differences, though, is that mom or dad is not the actual educator, that you are choosing to bring someone else into this equation as the primary educator. And I think for some families, especially those working families we kind of touched on earlier, that might be a huge part of this picture here, that this still allows the parents to sit there if they have to go out and work jobs, especially essential jobs, and still know that their children are being educated, and educated in a way that upholds their family's values and feelings about education.
Why are some school districts opposing pod learning?
I think some of it goes back to that lack of control. If you have teachers being recruited directly by families to come into a small situation like that, you have teachers with a smaller classroom than schools can really offer. You know, if you have three or four families hiring a teacher, you have a very small class. And then teachers get control back over how they're teaching, what they're teaching, when they're teaching it. Teachers have more control in the situation than they've ever really had in the classroom. And that has been, I think, a really hot button issue in education for a long time, is kind of the mismatch between teachers in the classroom, teaching to the test, the pressure put on teachers by administrations, by school boards, between what needs to be taught in order to uphold standards versus what teachers want to do. And so this allows teachers to kind of step outside of all of that and back into actually just focusing on teaching. There's also issues with funding. Every state funds schools in different ways, but you always have the issue when you are stepping outside of your local public school that schools can lose funding when your children are not there. And so for some school districts, that's a huge deal. If you have a bunch of children opt out of the system, it can be catastrophic for your local schools. So that's something to keep in mind.
You cite as an example Fairfax County Public Schools in Virginia. What was their reasoning for refusing to support any kind of pod learning?
Yeah, they came out and they spoke against this. And one of the things they cited was the gap in educational access and equity. And so this is the idea that when you have some families focusing very deliberately on schooling during all of this instability, during this pandemic, you have other families who are not able to do so, unfortunately, where because of difficult situations, schooling becomes less of a focus for that family. Oftentimes, it's totally outside of their control and outside of their preference. And so when we have some families who are able to hire a private teacher, for example, their kids are going to sit there and have a very focused educational experience this year. And so that educational gap that they're talking about, you're going to have them getting regular instruction. And 2020, the end of last year, we saw the era of the digital dropout. This was a huge thing when schools went online. A lot of children weren't able to access any education at all. They didn't have internet at home, or they didn't have a parent home to help them with school, or they had parents who had barriers to just accessing the technology themselves. And so they went all of spring with really no education happening. And it's, I think, incredibly difficult thinking about these kids who had all of this time basically lost with their own schooling. And if things continue to be so unstable through the fall, we're talking about almost a whole year's worth of school just lost for these kids. And it's a really sad problem, and there aren't any easy solutions for this.
What does the reaction against pod schooling on the part of school officials tell us about the officials' attitude toward school choice in general?
School choice is such a hot button issue. You know, there are people who vehemently oppose things like charter schools, school waivers, educational savings accounts, funding for special needs students at home to learn in different ways, religious schools, private schools, homeschooling, all of this. And it's really just coming to a head. And I think pod schools, pandemic pods, whatever you want to call them, micro schools, I think this is just kind of a convenient target for educational choice and the angst focused at it. When you have families who are able to access education in the very specific way that works best for that family, for that child, for that set of children in the home, you have the freedom for those children to learn in exactly the best way for those kids. And I think any time that we can offer people more choices, that we can offer them more options, I think in the end, it's really good for families and it's really good for children. And I think it's really unfortunate that that's scary for some people. I think if this is done well, it could be a really good thing for teachers. I think it could be a really good thing for children, for families, for everyone. And I would love to see this be a thing where everybody actually works together to have this be better for teachers, better for children, better for education in general.
You say that some of these reactions from school officials essentially pit families against schools. How is that?
I think it is some of that funding thing. I think it's some of that lack of control. And I think it's hard because you have administrators who care deeply about education. That's why they went into this field, right? They care deeply about children. They care about goals and education and having, you know, good outcomes for everyone. They're looking at the big picture. And then you have families who are looking at their individual children. Their focus is on the small picture, their children who live in their actual home. And sometimes there is a huge mismatch between educating every child in your community and trying to do what's best for everyone, and you sitting there with the children in your home and your family and trying to do just what's best for your individual family. And I think sometimes those goals can be very far apart, and it ends up making the group feel like the enemy of the individual. And I think this situation really can heighten that feeling where individual rights, individual goals, what's best for the individual can sometimes feel so far apart from what's best for the group. And I think it's also very difficult because of the pandemic and because of how far apart it's moved communication, the ability for groups of people to sit down and actually have conversations, that these things can't just be talked through. When we're having to have all of these conversations over distance communication means, how can we really sit there and bring families and school boards together in a meaningful way to just talk this through, get everyone back on track, that we all really want the same thing in the end, and that is for kids to learn in the best way for them.
Talk a little bit about how pod learning aligns with public health recommendations.
I think it aligns very well because public health right now, their overarching message to us is that we're supposed to be socially distancing. We're not supposed to be meeting in big groups. We're supposed to be selectively cocooning with people who share similar risk levels with us, that share similar lifestyle choices with us, who maybe are not leaving the house or leaving the house in similar ways to us. Pod schooling allows you to do that. You pick families who are making similar choices to you. They have similar ideological beliefs to you in terms of how to handle this pandemic. And you can sit there and make the deliberate choice to involve your family with them on an educational level. When you engage in a full classroom experience right now, you have no idea how all of the other families in that classroom are handling things. There's a total breakdown, again, of communication in terms of how do you actually have that conversation. When you have a much smaller group, you're able to really sit down and discuss these things all the way through. And pod schooling really lets you sit there and do that in a way that aligns well with public health recommendations.
Finally, Holly, do you expect that some pod schools may turn out to be not only a phenomenon of the pandemic, but permanent?
You know, I think actually they will. I think school choice is only going to continue to expand in the weeks and the months and the years and the decades to come. I think the amount of choices we had 15 years ago were far smaller than the amount of choices we have now. And I think 15 years from now, we're going to have choices that we can't even think about right now. I think each family that sits here and finds a new option today is helping craft a new normal for the future for our children right now, for their children, for our grandchildren. I think this moves all of us forward into more choices in the future and hopefully choices that work well for families.
Holly Shear is a Lutheran pastor's wife and mother of four children in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Why It's Ridiculous to Dunk on Parents for Privately Schooling Kids in Pods." Read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Holly, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
It's This Week in Pop Christianity on the other side of the break. Pastor Chris Roseboro of Fighting for the Faith will join us. We'll talk about Francis Chan's claim that Christians are like Jesus, both God and man. Stay tuned. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $350,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Are you planning your vacation in the Orlando area? Are you thinking about retiring in Central Florida? Are you looking for a faithful Lutheran church near the theme parks? Then Zion Lutheran Church and School is the place for you. We're in Winter Garden, Florida, about 20 minutes from all the attractions. At Zion Lutheran Church and School, we believe, teach, and confess God's truth for you. Find out more on our website, ZionWG.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scher, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.